Hello there. Today we're looking at implicit MLE backpropagating through discrete exponential family distributions by Matthias Niepert, Pascal Minervini, and Luca Franceschi. This paper is a paper that we've discussed in our regular paper discussions on Discord, and so it is informed by everything that I have heard there. If you want to take part in these discussions and influence my opinions, you're very welcome to do so. The link to the Discord is in the video description. All right, let's get into this paper right now. This paper proposes essentially a discrete layer for neural networks. This is maybe how I can describe it. And the basic setup is in this figure right here. So let's say you have an input X, which might be some sort of a continuous input like an image. They do give an example. By the way, the authors, they have quite helpful code that's available, but also they have made themselves a little video about the paper. And I also recommend that you go watch that video because it's quite helpful. So what they give as an example in the video, which I find a good example, is you have a map of, and they use, I think they use even Warcraft maps, but you have a map and you know, there's like a lake somewhere, and then there's like a little house right here and so on. And your task is to go from the top left here to the bottom right. So you need to plan your way somehow through that. Now, you don't get this as a graph that would be directly input into Dijkstra's algorithm. However, you get this as an actual image, right? Yet the solution here is going to be some sort of a path, some sort of a gold path. That's the label, or maybe something even derived from the gold path, like how long the gold path is. So maybe that's 5 long or something like this. So it's very complicated. You first need to recognize, where can I even go based on the image on the left? Then you need to find the shortest path based on you've determined where to go. Then you need to evaluate based on that shortest path. You need to evaluate some property, for example, as I said, how long is the shortest path, or just, you know, follow the shortest path on the actual map. So it's a mix of continuous and discrete elements. And specifically, the part in the middle that's described by this P of Z right here, that is going to be some sort of a discrete solver. In the case here, it's going to be a shortest path algorithm. Now, the question is, how can we run backpropagation if we only have the label on the right-hand side? How can we backpropagate? I mean, we can backpropagate from the label through here, right? This is a neural network that maybe determines some property of the shortest path. But then how are we going to backpropagate through this layer right here back to this neural network that's supposed to extract the input graph to the Dijkstra algorithm from the image? And that is a challenge. There have been some solutions already. For example, one famous example is a score matching. That is also an example. But the famous example is the straight through estimator. However, that it doesn't always work. It fails sometimes. And specifically, here the authors propose a different framework in this implicit MLE framework. We're going to look at how that's built up. This is a very technical paper, and I'm by no means an expert in these things. I just try to give you a little bit of the idea of what's happening right here, so that you know what's going on. And if you have something like this in your neural network, like a combinatorial optimization solver or anything like this, then you can just go grab their code and use that as a layer. It is really super simple. All right, that was the overview. Now let's get into the paper. Hold on, this video is sponsored by Weights and Biases. Weights and Biases is your one-stop shop for all your machine learning needs. It will track your experiments with a single line of code. It'll upload automatically all your logs, all your configurations, everything to your cloud. It will automatically grab all the output, all the metrics, all the configurations of your experiments and store that in one neat location. So you can see your experiments, you can track them wherever they run. You can compare among the experiments, but you can go further. You can then tune your hyperparameters according to the results of those experiments. And all of this is done automatically in a distributed way. You can literally sit on your toilet on your smartphone and tune your hyperparameters and start new experiments. But it's not only experiment tracking and hyperparameter tuning. Weights and Biases has tools for the entire pipeline of machine learning research, from the initial idea up until the deployment and beyond that, when you actually want to track what you've deployed. Weights and Biases has cool methods to track all of your data set and their dependencies to each other, as well as your models and all kinds of other artifacts that you might produce. They're very powerful visualizations for all the inputs and outputs of your pipelines, as well as the models themselves. All of this runs in the cloud, but if you're concerned about privacy, there are options to self-host. The system is free for personal use and for academics, and they have great plans for enterprises, small teams, large teams, doesn't matter. So thank you very much, Weights and Biases, for sponsoring this video. If you don't know them yet, absolutely check them out. It's free, it'll make your life a whole lot easier. Now, let's get into the video. As I said, the problem right here is that you have these kind of discrete tasks sometimes as a part of an entire learning setup. So the paper makes different contributions, but here they're listed out. They say, we propose the implicit maximum likelihood estimation as a framework for computing gradients with respect to the parameters of discrete exponential family distributions. So what we want is, of course, gradients of this discrete process in the middle, and the discrete process specifically is going to be formulated as a exponential family distribution, and we're going to see how that happens. They say, we show that this framework is useful for backpropagating gradients through both discrete probability distributions and discrete optimization problems. And that would be the example right here, would be a Dijkstra's shortest path algorithm or an integer linear program solver or anything like this. In fact, they're one of the general formulations they have is for integer linear program solving. IMLE requires two ingredients, a family of target distribution Q, and a method to sample from complex discrete distributions. We propose two families of target distributions and a family of noise distributions for Gumball max-based sampling. So we're going to look into how that works and exactly what it contributes. We show that this simplifies to explicit maximum likelihood learning when used in some studied settings. And experimental evaluation. These points we're probably not going to go into too much. Essentially, in point four, they show that for some settings, this reflects already established methods. So it's in sort of a generalization of methods that have already been around, of methods that are maybe specific to a given setting or problem. And the experimental results, well, their experimental results essentially show that their method, for example, outcompete the straight-through estimator method. So what's the deal with discrete things in neural networks? The problem is, of course, that we can't compute gradient with respect to discrete things. Now, take, for example, the straight-through estimator. The problem it's trying to solve, or one of the problems, you can formulate it like this. You have some X, you put it into neural network, and out in the middle somewhere, you are required, for some reason, to sample from some sort of distribution. For example, you're required to, this produces a probability distribution over a few classes, let's say over four classes. And then what you're going to do is you're going to sample one of the classes right here, and then you're going to continue with that through the rest of your neural network until you're at the label. Now, again, as before, you need to backpropagate in order to learn through this network, which is easy, but through the choice, through the sampling procedure of that inner layer, and that's hard. So what the straight-through estimator does is it's a bit of a trick. It essentially, in the forward pass, you do the discrete optimization, you do the sampling, but in the backward pass, you act as if you simply propagated the distribution as such. So to the forward pass, it is really a discrete sample, but to the backward pass, it looks like you've simply you never sampled. You simply passed the whole distribution and say, well, I'm not sure, it's like 70% this and 30% this. The way you would implement that usually is you have some signal, let's call that H, for maybe that's the histogram right here. And what you would do is you would, if you sample from H, that was going to give you like S. Well, let's say we take the most likely state, right? So we determine H, and we take the most likely state, which is, let's say S is the argmax of H. Okay, that is your sample. Now, what you would do in your forward pass is you would compute the next layer, H prime, as S, which, and then plus H minus a stop gradient of H. So the stop gradient, am I doing this correct? No, of course not. Of course not. Yes? Oh, yes, I'm doing this correctly, of course. Okay, so let's analyze this. In the forward pass, the stop gradient has no effect on the forward signal. So these two here essentially cancel out. These cancel out to zero. However, in the backward pass, right, since derivation is distributes over addition and subtraction, what you would do if you were to derive the gradient of H prime, that's essentially the gradient of S plus the gradient of H plus the gradient of stop gradient of H. Now, minus. Stop gradient of H obviously has no gradient, so that goes to zero. The gradient of S is also zero because it's a discrete operation, and most of these frameworks simply tell you, well, the gradient is zero, it's a discrete operation. If you're not sure that this is happening, you may in fact also put a stop gradient operator around S. And you can see what remains is the gradient of H. So you see the trick in the forward pass, these two cancel out. However, since in the backward pass, this by itself is already zero because of the stop gradient operation, the gradient of H remains right here. This is a trick. You can simply swap out a gradient in the backward pass for whatever you like with this trick. People have used this to get gradients with respect to discrete operations like this. But this paper right here is an alternative, and as they show in some situations, it is more appropriate to use that alternative. However, it is also quite a bit more tricky. So what's the first thing we're going to do? The first thing we're going to do is we're going to take that inner thing right here, that inner procedure. And again, let's go back to the task of finding the shortest path. So what's the input? The input is some sort of a graph, right, where you need to find the shortest path with cost associated with each of the edges and some start and some end goal. And what we want is the shortest path, something like this. Now, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to encode this problem into a binary vector. Now, how exactly we do this is I don't really know for shortest path problems, but we're going to encode this into essentially, well, not a binary vector, but I'm going to encode the problem into this vector theta right here. So theta, in this case, what you would do is your theta vector, this is the theta vector, it will have, it will have probably for each edge, it will have an entry with the negative cost of that edge associated in the vector. So the negative cost of edge 1, the negative cost of edge 2, the negative cost of edge 3. Now, why are we doing this? You can see that we are going to multiply this theta with another vector called z. And z here is the, let's call it the solution or the proposed solution to this inner problem. And z is now a binary vector. So z can either be 1 or 0 in each entry. And it's going to be 1 if and only if this edge here is part of the proposed solution. So any path in this graph can be represented by a given z variable, right? By simply setting a bunch of things to 1 and 0. I can select some of the edges, and if I have selected the correct ones, they will form a path, and if I have selected the absolutely correct ones, they will in fact form the shortest path. You can immediately see that for the shortest path, the inner product between the two vectors will be the highest among all the paths, right? So this is how I formulate my problem. I'm formulating my problem between as an inner product between a binary vector and some sort of a weight vector theta, such that for the solution of the inner problem, like the shortest path algorithm or the k subset selection or the integer linear program, such that for the solution of this problem, it is the case that this inner product is the highest possible. Now you immediately see that, of course, I can make that inner product even higher by putting all of the edges to 0, right? So, you know, z right here, I can simply say 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. All the costs here are negative, ergo I have no negative cost, ergo that is going to be 0, and that is going to be the largest possible. I've solved the problem. What's the problem? This isn't a path in the original formulation. So the last ingredient we're missing right here is what they sometimes here call capital C. This thing right here, capital C, is a constraint set. So capital C would define, in this case, what the valid entries for the z vector are. So z must be in this capital C class. And I think c must be in the, yes. That defines what the valid solutions even look like. So in the simplest case, if this is a classification problem, right? If this is a classification problem, theta would sort of, you can think of this as a classification problem, and then z would be selecting the class, right? You can model theta in this case as just a vector of ones. And then z right here could select the class by simply putting that entry to 1, wherever of whatever class is selected. And the constraint set C could be easily modeled by saying the norm, the sum of all the entries, which is probably the 1 norm of Z, must be equal to 1. Right. That could be the constraint set. Am I correct here? I'm not sure I can actually model. I probably can't model it like this. Like here, there probably needs to be some sort of cost per class or something like here, and then I can model the constraint as saying the inner product of z with a vector of ones must be equal to 1. That looks better. So that is actually part of the definition of the constraint set. And the problem in these cases is that this constraint set makes it very difficult on obtaining good gradients through this discrete problem, because right here, as you can see, it's not really easy, because most of the z vectors in the Dijkstra problem aren't actually valid paths. So the issue here is that we need a gradient. We need to respect the constraint set of the problem. They go ahead and they formulate this, as I said, as this problem where you have a this vector z is whatever solution you propose. The theta is the definition of the problem. The inner product is sort of the reward, let's say, the reward, maybe the inverse loss of the problem. And they can now formulate this as a exponential family distribution by simply raising this, by putting this inside of an exponential function. Let's see if they've done it somewhere right here. Look at that. Oh, it's not even a minus sign. All right. So for now, just trust them that it is necessary to formulate it as a distribution, and don't just kind of hang in there. It is going to get very complicated, but it is going to lead somewhere. So they can formulate this inner process as a probability distribution, P of z, where that is according to the exponential family. So as I said, the exponential family here, you put in this thing right here. There's a temperature at which you sample. So what is that essentially is going to do is going to normalize, you know, given this right here, this is the log partition function, it's the normalization constant. This is essentially going to give you a distribution over the individual dimensions of the z vector. And that is going to be normalized, and it is going to be more peaky or less peaky depending on the temperature right here. So the process that they formulate this as is you take some input x right here, you put it through the first neural network to obtain the theta. The theta is essentially the problem definition for the inner algorithm. The inner algorithm you formulate as a probability distribution. So it's going to have more or less likely states, with the more likely states being the ones that solve the inner optimization problem more perfectly to more reward. So z is going to be a random variable that is according to that distribution. For now, you can just think of z as a random variable, and the likely states of z are the ones that have the paths that have a very short path through in our example, or whatever states solve the inner problem very accurately. And then from that z, we're going to put that through another neural network. That's going to give us our output, and we're going to compare the output with the gold label, and then we're going to backpropagate through all of it. Our parameters are the parameters here and here. So the parameters of the two neural networks FU right here. This is easy to do, right? Because we can simply backpropagate from Y into the neural network. And the parameters of HV, the V parameters, this is hard. This is the hard part. So what do we need to do in order to backpropagate all the way to to the V variables? Well, what we need to do is we need to, the direction here is that the parameters, X becomes theta, becomes z, becomes y. This is with the help of the parameters v, and this is the help of the parameters u. Right? U is easy. For v, what we need to do if we want to have what you can see right here, the gradient with respect to v, we first need the gradient with respect to theta, and then we can, once we have the gradient with respect to theta, where is it? Ah, yes, here. Once we have the parameters with respect to theta, we can use the backpropagation algorithm again to backpropagate into this network and change the weights v. So how do we get the gradients with respect to theta? Again, this means we have to backpropagate through this piece right here, which is the inner optimization algorithm. So the, here is it. Here is the chain rule expanded. This is this here. That's theta. So we need the parameters, the gradient with respect to theta, and then we can use backprop. Okay. This, by the way, is the entire algorithm as it's going to be later. You can see it's fairly simple. You can also see there is a LaTeX mistake right here, but I think that's my conversion. So what they do is they say this, it's very hard, it's very, very hard to compute this gradient with respect to this inner optimization procedure, right? It's very hard to compute a gradient with respect to the Dijkstra shortest path algorithm. Essentially, you'd have to know, how do I need to change my graph definition in order for the path to become shorter or in different in some way, right? And that's very hard. Like, all you can do really is kind of try and see what happens. I wouldn't know anywhere anyhow else, because remember that what the theta is, the theta is the output of the first neural network. So the theta is the definition of the graph, and that is produced by this neural network right here that looks at the picture and gives you the discrete graph. So essentially what it gives you is an adjacency matrix, but still. So the question is, you know, how does my adjacency matrix need to change for the Dijkstra algorithm to find a shorter path, let's say a shorter path, a path that is more close to the gold label that I have, because you don't always want shorter, you actually want to learn from data. So the first step they do in this challenge, in this sub-challenge right here, is they say, this is too hard. We're going to replace the loss right here, this loss, the true loss of our output compared to the label, with a surrogate loss. This L is an implicitly defined maximum likelihood objective, and we're going to calculate its gradient instead of the gradient of our true loss. Now, the logic of how we get there is the following. In this inner problem, we define a probability this probability distribution. Remember, what is this? P here. P describes the solution space of, in our case, the Dijkstra algorithm. So P is a distribution that would assign high value to, or high likelihood to, paths that are very short in the graph that's defined by theta, and low value to paths that are very long in this same graph, right? Now, what we can say is, this is essentially a distribution. Can we find a different distribution, what we call a target distribution, where we can show that in expectation, the loss from this target distribution right here is always smaller than the loss from the true distribution? So essentially, can we find a distribution that where the paths that it outputs are lower in loss, lower in the final loss than the ones we have? So remember, we have X and all of that, and at the end there is Y, right? We predict Y, and we compare the Y to the true Y. And there's going to be some loss. And the question is, can we reduce that loss right here? So we don't necessarily want to find theta such that we find a shorter path, but we want to find a more appropriate theta in here such that the rest of the neural network can predict Y hat more accurately in order to be closer to Y. If our neural network right here is very bad at actually extracting a proper walkable graph from the landscape right here, like if it doesn't recognize that this is a lake, you know, it thinks, yeah, all of this is really fine to walk on and so on, the graph right here will be quite crappy. The weights on the edges will be not accurate, right? It's not inferred correctly from the landscape. That means that this network here will have a pretty hard time determining the actual value of the shortest path, because even though the Dijkstra algorithm does a good job of finding the shortest path, it's on the wrong graph, and therefore it's useless. So what we need to be able to do is we need to be able to more accurately extract the graph from the image, so we need to train these parameters right here. So here we ask ourselves, can we come up this distribution P here, that's the distribution of solutions to the problem that's defined by theta. We ask ourselves, can we come up with a distribution that has a lower loss than the distribution we have? And the answer is going to be, yes, we can do so with a simple, let's say, trick. So if you look at back at this, I realize we're in like three layers deep of problems. Like we have a problem, for that we have another problem to solve, for that we have another problem to solve. Our current problem is that we want to see, can we change this distribution such that the loss is lower? How do we need to change this distribution, essentially? And the answer is going to be, we're going to take the output right here, and we're going to pass it through this network. We're going to look at the loss, and we're going to backpropagate that loss until the point where this algorithm stops. And then we're going to take one gradient step into the direction right here. And then that is going to be our new distribution. So what does that mean in our example right here? We're going to take the graph that we output right here. We're going to run it through Dijkstra, gives us the shortest path. Remember, this is a crappy graph because our network initially is not good. We're going to put that through this neural network right here that determines the cost, and we're going to calculate the loss and backpropagate that. So what does that give us ultimately? That tells us, well, the gradient says, how do I need to change the output right here in order for the neural network that follows to do a better job, right? And let's say the output is, well, this edge here has a bad weight. Or, in fact, this edge, there's an edge right here that's missing, or something like this. No, sorry. No, that is formulated wrongly. What we are going to change is, we're going to change, obviously, the Z, which is the solution. So it's going to say, in this shortest path that you computed, there's something wrong. For example, you should have maybe taken a different shortest path, or you should have weighed it differently, or something like this. And we're going to take a step into that direction. So, for example, if the shortest path, rather than up and over, should have gone directly, we know that the edge right here should have had maybe a lower cost associated with it, or something like this. So we're going to use gradient descent to see, how do we need to change the inner problem such that the rest of the pipeline does a better job. And that's what you see. That's what you see right here somewhere. There, okay. So this is the target distribution, is this right here. So it's the same as the regular distribution of inner solutions. However, instead of inputting the graph as it is, we're going to input the graph minus a step size times the gradient of the loss with respect to the output of the inner with respect to the output of the inner solver. So this is using gradient descent in order to come up with a better problem definition right here. Since these two are vectors, they're multiplied together, we can use, in fact, the gradient with respect to z and subtract that from theta because they're of the same dimension, right? So we're going to ask ourselves, what would be a more appropriate problem definition in order for the rest of the network to do a better job? And that's going to be our so-called target distribution. And now our job, now we have a pretty simple job. Our job is going to be, well, can we make it such that the current graph that we output right here is more like this target graph? So can we make the distribution P more like the distribution Q? Is the same as asking, can we make the current graph that was output by the network H more like the graph that would be more optimal for the rest of the network? And that is, let's say, a solvable problem. In fact, if you work it out, the formulas get pretty simple. So if we do it like this, and by the way, this inequality here is crucial, obviously, because but we see why it's given. Because of gradient descent, we're in expectation guaranteed that the Q distribution is going to have a lower loss than the P distribution, because we do one step of gradient descent with respect to the loss, right? So essentially, we do a step of gradient descent in the inside, and then our surrogate loss is going to be, well, can we make the output distribution more like the result of that gradient descent? This must be one of the most confusing videos ever, but I hope you're still with us. So what we want is to make these two distributions closer. Remember, we said we can't backpropagate through the discrete optimization procedure. So what did we do? We said instead of backpropagating through the inner optimization procedure, we're going to replace that by a new objective. The new objective has two steps. Step one, determine what would be a better output what would be a better input for the discrete solver. And then step two is, can we make the input that we've received more like the input to the discrete solver, right? This is where we do the gradient descent inside. And how are we going to make distributions more like each other? That's this right here. This is the KL divergence between P, the actual distribution, and Q, the target distribution. And that's going to be our surrogate loss that we use instead of the loss that we cannot differentiate. If these are both exponential family distributions, you'll see that this pretty easily cancels out and reduces. And in the end, the gradient of this surrogate loss simply going to be the difference between the two marginals, so between the two means of the distributions. Now, this seems pretty easy, but inside of the three layers of problem, we get another problem. So what does this mean? This is the mean of the exponential family distribution when given a certain problem definition theta prime, or theta if you're over here. This, given that it's a hard problem with these constraint sets and so on, calculating the mean of such a distribution is hard. It's in fact probably as hard as solving the entire problem itself. So calculating the mean of these distributions is not an easy task. Sampling from these distributions straightforwardly is also not an easy task. So what this paper does is it says, for under certain conditions, what we can do is we can replace the mean with this. And this is a trick, a method that they call perturb, and map. And by map, they mean maximum a posteriori. So essentially means that for the exponential distributions, what we can do is we can approximate the mean using map, the most likely state. And what's the most likely state? For example, in this Dijkstra algorithm, the most likely state is in fact the shortest path by how we define the problem. Right? So we've defined the problem as the inner product between the problem definition and the proposed solution. Now, what's the most likely proposed solution if likelihood is given by the inner product? Obviously, the one that maximizes the inner product, which is the one that, by construction, has the shortest path. Okay, so fairly convoluted, but this is something we can actually do. So we cannot calculate the means of these distributions, but we can calculate the most likely states. And it's not so straightforward. In fact, it is a better estimate. So they consider, I think, yes, so here, computing the marginals is in general a, what's that, sharp, P-sharp, hard problem. It scales poorly with dimensionality. So map states are often used to directly approximate the means. However, it's apparently better if you use this perturb and map strategy, where you estimate the mean not directly as the most likely state, but as an expectation, sampling from a noise distribution and perturbing this state. What does that mean? That means that you can get the mean of the distribution. Let's again draw our Dijkstra graph right here, like that. You can get the mean of this distribution by slightly perturbing the problem. So maybe slightly reweighing the edges, saying this edge is higher, this edge is now lower, slightly perturbing a lot of times, and then every time you calculate the shortest path. So most of the time, like this will be the shortest path for most of this, but then every now and then you'd perturb it so hard that, you know, this edge now goes up very high in cost. So then you'd have this as the shortest path right here, and so on. But ultimately, yeah, so adding all of that up, getting the expectations over all the shortest paths in all for a lot of perturbations will give you a good approximation of the mean of that distribution. The last question is a little bit, okay, what noise distribution is appropriate for this? And the answer is going to be that it is going to be a Gumbel noise. And I think this now gets a little bit too deep, but just to mention this right here, if in fact there are some properties are given and the specific property that needs to be given for this to be accurate is that you can define the problem always such that the constraint set is given by a number k, where you can see right here exactly k entries in Z have to be 1. If that's obviously not covering all of the problems we've considered, but it covers a lot of the problems we've considered. And even if not, you can still apply it, as they say. It's just not as appropriate, but still appropriate enough. And they also have a way to sample Gumbel distributed random variables. But I don't think necessarily we need to go into that. You just need to know that the appropriate noise distribution, in fact, to get a good estimate of the mean is a Gumbel noise. Gumbel distribution, by the way, it describes extremal values. So if you want to know the distribution of the maxima of some phenomenon, that will be Gumball distributed. And then you have it. At the end of the day, you would this surrogate gradient would be given by the difference between perturbed maximum, the maximum a posteriori solutions of perturbed thetas right here. And yeah, so this is a few layers deep. Let's actually look at the entire algorithm and you'll see it's not that hard. So what do we do? In the forward pass, we take x, and as I said, we get theta. This is a neural network. In our case, it takes a picture and it extracts the adjacency matrix, which is theta. So it extracts the graph that we're now going to run Dijkstra on. Okay. So this theta goes into this forward pass right here. What do? In fact, we forward propagate the maximum a posteriori state of a perturbed version of theta. And this here, if you remember, this here is going to give us the mean, that's a wrong mu, is going to give us the mean of that distribution that we're looking for. Okay, so it's going to be forward propagated in. So that is going to be forward propagated to, let's say, to the second neural network, and that's going to give us y, or at least an estimate of y, and then we're going to compare to the real y, we're going to get the loss, and now we're back propagating, right? So back propagating, we take the loss, we go back through this first neural network until we're here. And that is where this starts. So the backward pass, that would come in here, right? This gradient here, that's the gradient we get from the chain rule in the backward pass. We also need this step size lambda right here. Okay, so what are we going to do? We're going to take that gradient, and rather than giving it straight to like the straight through estimator or to the chain rule, we're going to compute an update to the theta, to our graph definition, right, to our adjacency matrix, or our cost matrix for the shortest path algorithm, essentially saying, how do I need to change the problem definition for the Dijkstra algorithm in order for the downstream modules to do a better job predicting the correct label y. So we're going to compute an updated theta. Then we're going to compute this surrogate loss right here. And the surrogate loss, as you've seen right here, is going to be the difference between the two perturbed maximum a posteriori things. So it's going to be by the results that we've derived. Where was it? Here, by these results right here. Remember, this is the gradient. This is directly the gradient of our surrogate loss. And the surrogate loss is, can we make the output of the first neural network closer to something that's more useful? So the gradient is directly given by the difference between these two things. So by the difference of marginals, which we approximate by the difference of maximum posteriori. So this requires us to run Dijkstra once here in the forward pass, and then it requires it to run Dijkstra again here once on this updated graph. And the difference between the two is going to be the gradient in which we have to update our inputs. Okay, notice that I've talked, I think, a bit confusingly. So here I already said, how do we need to update our problem definition, right? And you could think that, you know, we could feed that directly upstream. but we can't. The real gradient we want to feed upstream is, right, is this thing right here. So essentially the top thing is, how do we need to change our problem definition so the downstream neural network can do a better job? And this right here is that how does the upstream network, so the one that maps x to theta, how does that need to change its behavior in order to produce a better input to the solver? Yes, that is the least confusing I can say. And then we return the gradient, that gradient that we computed, and this is our substitute gradient for the gradient that would be, this is our substitute gradient for the gradient of the true loss with respect to theta. And since it's a gradient with respect to theta, we can continue backpropagating through here, backpropagating it into this neural network here, and update the weights. So that is it. The only thing I'm not sure about is if they really return the z hat right here. Like, it was my impression that in the forward pass, they would actually feed the true z upstream, but I'm not sure, because, for example, where was it? Yeah, here they rely on z bar, which is z bar is essentially that's mu. So not sure exactly. We might have to look at the code exactly, but I hope you understand a little bit of what's going on right here. So recap. We have some discrete part in our neural network, like a shortest path algorithm or some other combinatorial solver, or even sampling from or taking the top k elements from some distribution, something like this. Okay, this is not the entire algorithm, but this is one layer in the neural network, right? The layer really requires a discrete operation to continue. The question is, how can we backpropagate through that in order to update the rest of the network, specifically these upstream parts right here that are in front of it? They need a gradient signal from the loss that's all the way over here at the end. So what do we do? We use this algorithm right here. We forward propagate, let's say we forward propagate regularly. In the backward pass, we first compute a better, a target distribution, a parameterization of the target distribution, which essentially means we are going to construct a better problem definition, that would make the downstream life easier. So making the downstream life easier means that we move into the direction of the gradient of that downstream loss. We move with a certain step size. And then we ask ourselves, well, having this target distribution now, can we make our upstream modules such that they provide the solver with something that's actually more close like that target distribution? And that is exactly the gradient with respect to theta, and that is going to be computed as a difference between two marginals, as we've shown. And we cannot compute the marginals because these distributions are very complex, they have these constraint sets and so on. But what we can do is we can compute most likely states. That's exactly what these solvers do. And if we compute the most likely states of these perturbed inputs, that is going to be a good approximation, a good estimator for the marginals. And there, and then at the end, we get the gradient, a substitute gradient that approximates the true gradient with respect to the input. I want to highlight why this is so complicated. It's because essentially we have no idea how to backpropagate through like a Dijkstra's shortest path algorithm. The question is, how do I need to change the input right here such that something based on the output changes in some way, right? For that, I essentially need to know, well, if I change the graph a little bit, like if I upweigh this edge right here, how is the shortest path going to change? And this is not a continuous process. This is a discrete process, right? It's not going to change for a while until I up this too much, and then all of a sudden, shwoop-de-boop, the shortest path is a different route. Like, it's really discontinuous. So what we're going to do, and that's going to be a problem of selecting the hyperparameters, like the lambda and the temperature of the exponential distributions, is going to be how exactly, like how noisy do I have to make this process to get an actual estimate of how my outputs change. So essentially what I do is I perturb, so this adding this noise right here, I change my graph a little bit like this, right? And then sometimes the shortest path is going to change. If I do this, you know, a million times, then I have a good idea, a little bit of how is my shortest path changing with respect to an input change. Okay? So that's essentially what I do, but the problem is I need to tune the hyperparameters. If I change too little, the shortest path is not going to change at all, and I'm going to have no idea, you know, how I need to adjust because there's no gradient. If I change too much, the shortest path is just going to fly around wildly, changing every time. And again, I have no idea how to change anything in order to go into a specific direction. So that's the challenge right here. And the additional challenge, I don't want to do it a million times for each forward and backward pass. Ideally, I want to draw one sample and have that sample be a good low variance estimator of what I'm looking for. Cool. So I've left out part of this, like entire parts of this paper that you can still look at if you so desire, but this is the basic idea. Again, you can take this, there's code, you can take it like inside of a layer. I think I have it open right here. It's available. There's code in Torch and in TensorFlow. They give a little bit of an example of this is not the entire algorithm. This is a little bit of an example of one part of that algorithm to essentially show this inner routine where you have to come up with good set of problem definition. So here you see the true problem. This is on the left, you can walk on the bright paths and you cannot walk on the dark squares. And you can see that if you, for example, if you don't sample at all, if the temperatures are set to zero, then this is what you get. You can see kind of the shortest path, but it's not really good, right? If you up the temperature a little bit and let the algorithm do some exploration on, you know, using the inner algorithm, you can see that over time you get a much better, a much clearer picture of what the supposed landscape is looking like. So this, again, this is not the entire thing. This is just this inner part. It's an illustration of why you need appropriate amount of noise for that inner part. You can see that over time, as the algorithm infers, every time it solves the shortest path algorithm, it gets a good idea over time of how the landscape looks like. All right, I invite you to read the paper, check out the code, check out the video that was made by the authors themselves. It's surely linked somewhere, or I'll link it. It'll give you a fresh perspective. And with that, and thank you so much for listening, I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Oh, there's experiments. Well, okay. Well, there's experiments. They're better than other stuff. Cool. Excellent. Bye.